You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB At The Plate. MLB At The Plate airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern time on TuneIn. Now, here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and J.P. Arencibia.
Welcome into the MLB At The Plate podcast. I'm Holden Kushner alongside J.P. Arencibia. And tonight, we're going to start the podcast out with the MLB At The Plate Triple Play, where JP and I discuss three topics that interest us. We start out the triple play by celebrating the Cleveland Indians' 22-game win streak, which came to an end on Friday, courtesy of the Kansas City Royals. JP and I get into umpire Jordan Baker's ejections of John Lackey and Wilson Contreras on Friday, who was in the wrong in that situation, and what the consequences will be for the playoff-bound Chicago Cubs. JP and I will finish up by highlighting the weekend series between Milwaukee and Miami. The series was moved from Miami to Milwaukee because of Hurricane Irma. So the Brewers are on the road on their own field.
The MLB At The Plate Triple Play.
JP, it's over. The Royals, again, taking out the Indians. This is the last three World Series representatives. Two from the Royals and last year from the Indians. And I'm thinking the Indians are going back. They'll probably have a bigger win than any of these 22 this year. But man, I'll never forget the first win, because this is a game where I was going to talk about it if the Red Sox and the Indians played in the playoffs. How about the Indians for the second time this year destroying Chris Sale? Nobody thought it was going to be a 22-game win streak. Game one of the streak, they beat Chris Sale. They split the 4-game series with Boston. They scored 7 runs in 3 innings against Chris Sale. And Sale got booted from the game. That, to me, is one thing I'll remember. And that was after they'd been blown out by Boston, 9-1 and 6-1. And the other big game was number 20. First of all, it's a round number. Second of all, 2-0 win over Detroit. Kluber, complete game, 5-hit shutout. Two games that really stand out to me. How about you? What are some of your thoughts, moments of this streak?
Well, I'm actually going to go a little bit before the streak. And I'm going to tell you why. Because starting on August 11th against the Braves, or against the Rays, excuse me. So their winning streak started on August 24th against Boston Red Sox. Okay, we're going to go back to the 11th. The 11th, they started 11 games before they went 9 wins. So they were already starting to heat up. They went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games in a row. They lost one and then went 7, 8, lost one, then went 9. So they won 9 out of 11 games right before their streak. So these guys were already starting to really, really play well before the streak. Okay, so if you really go, since August 11th, they've had 1, 2, 3, 4 losses since August 11th. So if you put that into perspective, think about it, that I know they won the 22 straight, but before that, they were on fire. And so another thing to me that stands out is the dominance of their division, okay? They go, they crush the Twins, they crush the Royals, they crush the Royals again at the towards the end of August, and then in September, they absolutely, obviously, in their division, just go bonkers. They Detroit a 4-game series. They sweep them at Detroit on a 4-game series. They sweep 4-game series at Chicago White Sox. And then they get back to Detroit, and they just swept Detroit. And then, obviously, yesterday they won against the Royals. Today they lost against the Royals. But for me, what stands out is the teams that see these guys the most in their division, they absolutely beat the brakes off of them. And that is hard to do, because when you play, when you're a good team and you play guys out of your division, you're seeing them maybe once, twice a year. You know, it's nothing. You don't have a ton of information, so sometimes the better teams just crush you. You're playing guys that you play 18 times a year, and they are just bringing out the whooping stick on you when you already know everything they have. That's what's impressive to me.
Just some of the numbers here that you look at during the 22-game win streak. They outscored their opponents by 105 runs. So they're winning by about 5 runs a game. They had a 937 on-base plus slugging. They hit 41 home runs, and their staff gave up 37 runs. And I'm looking at two guys in the staff in particular. We know the greatness of Corey Kluber. How about Mike Clevinger? Gives up 1 run in 23 and 2/3 innings, and Carlos Carrasco giving up 2 runs in 29 innings. I mean, there are just some crooked numbers that these guys put up, and we just get back to it. I think the pitching is the number one reason why, and there's a pretty good sign that came from tonight's loss nonetheless. How about Danny Salazar going out and throwing a shutout inning after a leadoff walk tonight? That's huge. If Salazar can get it right, stay healthy, and settle into a bullpen role before the playoffs begin, how much more deeper does this make their bullpen? Now a starter needs to go 5. Game's over.
Yeah, it's, and think about it. You know, you look at that bullpen, right? And this is what's scary about that bullpen. You look at that bullpen, you got Shaw coming in, you got Miller coming in, and you have Cody Allen shutting it down, right? What's crazy to me is now you throw into the mix Salazar, possibly in the 6th inning. It reminds me of the Royals bullpen when you had Hochever coming in the 6th. Then they would hand the ball off to Kelvin Herrera. Then they would hand the ball off to Wade Davis. And then it would go to Greg Holland. And it was just everybody that you faced from the 6th inning on was pumping absolute cheese and had nasty stuff. And that's what it reminds me of when you watch. Now you add a Salazar who, let's say you have to bring him in the 5th. You have, let's say, Bauer or somebody, whoever's not having the day, and you bring him in the 5th, 6th. You got from the 4th, 5th, 6th inning on, I mean, you have an absolutely shut down rest of the game. You see the Yankees are doing it. The Yankees are pulling their starters in the 4th inning, in the 5th inning. You know, that's because I think that people are starting to see if you can have a great bullpen, you'll shut games down. That's what they're doing.
Well, it worked for the Indians last year. They had Kluber, and then Carrasco and Salazar were not available. So they were just trying to get their starters 4 innings. The bullpen came in, and they would shut it down. And ultimately, Kluber just ran out of gas in Game 7, couldn't go to the complete game, and it fell down. But, you know, this is a better team right now. And we've said this a million times this year. This is a much better team on paper than they had last year. First of all, Carrasco's healthy, right? That's the first thing. Second of all, Bauer, even though he took the loss, pitching much better. Tomlin, McAllister. I mean, there's guys up and down here. Clevinger. All these guys are throwing so well. The bullpen, up and down. We've discussed it, but it's the offense that's the real difference because, well, again, Carrasco's back. And Encarnacion to go along with Jay Bruce. Jose Ramirez, who was their MVP last year, is even better this year, is in the MVP discussion for the whole American League. Lindor's a year older. I mean, this is a much better team right now than the one that almost won the World Series last year.
Undoubtedly. And again, this it's such a – I mean, we knew it going into the year that this team was going to be lights out. But wow, I mean, literally, you just watch these guys play and you watch them finish, and then you put the leader of the ship of an amazing team, you put Terry Francona, possibly one of the best managers of all time, to lead the way. I mean, that's why these guys, not only are they special on the field, the team is special, but when you have that kind of leadership at the front, you're talking about some pretty special people altogether. And again, we were there for spring training. Even the GM, Matt Antonetti, am I saying that correctly?
Chris Antonetti.
Even him, when we sat and we talked, how great was he? First off, the guy was in shape. You could tell how hard he works. They were talking about it in the clubhouse.
Navy SEALs.
Yeah, that these guys all train with Navy SEALs. So I think it's a culture. You talk about it, it's a culture from the top, man, and it is really, really cool to see. I'm glad that I had the opportunity to be around them in spring training and to see why, the leadership and the team is as good as it is. And I think that there's a lot of reasons why, and it trickles down from the top.
Well, now the Indians have won 22 of 23, so it's time to start a new streak. I think the most impressive thing for them would just be getting all the Worlds, just getting a World Series. That's it. Win 3, win four, and win another four. 11. That's the big number for them at this point. Are they going to have home field advantage? We'll find out. I mean, again, after you win 22 games, you can't tell me that there's not going to be something coming back down. It happens with every single team. You get so hot, you get in such a zone. And look at the Dodgers. They won 51 of 60 games. Then they couldn't win a game for a while. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, I think 22 is a perfect number for them. Get that out of your system. Get going. Start giving your starters a little bit of rest. Get the bullpen. Tito's just got to get his bullpen order set up. You know the last three guys. Get Andrew Miller clicking on all cylinders. Find out Danny Salazar's role. And then start looking at the guys that you're going to fill your bench out with. Because this is not about winning 23 games. This is about winning four games in a World Series. And this is why they've come back for this year. That's why, to me, they were the favorite to win a World Series. Why? Because they were so close last year, and they're better this year than they were last year. The only difference this year that they have going against them is they got a target on their back. That's the only thing, because they're the AL champions. You know what? It doesn't matter. To me, they should still be the overwhelming favorites. A lot of weird things happen in the playoffs, but in the American League, you can't tell me that the Astros are as good as they are. No team is as good as they are because they don't have a weakness. What's their weakness right now? What is it? You tell me. Is it their 8th and 9th hitter? I mean, is that it?
The only thing that could possibly be a weakness, and it's only because we don't see it, is maybe there's a clubhouse attendant somewhere in that stadium. Because if you talk about even the coaching staff, like I said, the coaching staff is nails. I mean, top to bottom, it's such a good, good team.
You and I, my friend, have something to talk about. Cubs down 2-1. They're down. John Lackey, furious with an umpire, not calling a strike 3 on Carlos Martinez. Martinez actually was walking across the other's batter's box to his dugout when the umpire said, nope, it's a ball. So, JP, this is bad on a couple fronts. Well, the good news is, even though they were down at the time, Cubs come back, beat the Cardinals in a very, very important game for both teams, 8-2. But if you're John Lackey, you should know better than that. And if you're Wilson Contreras, you cannot be getting yourself suspended long term. You get kicked out of a game, that's big, but you got to hope he doesn't get suspended. These guys just lost their minds for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, you know, listen, Lackey has always been one of those guys. He's a big show up, the umpire guy and upset guy on the field. He's always been like that. He's always had that kind of, I mean, he even looks at it. If you look at his face, he looks naturally upset. But the biggest thing for me is, yes, Lackey can't lose his cool like that, especially when he, you know, he has to be out there and helping these guys win. And this, you know, what that shows to me is these guys are feeling a little bit of pressure when they allow a situation that minuscule in the sense of a fifth inning. You're not talking about the 9th inning and it's a go-ahead. You're talking about the 5th inning and it was a run. So that tells me that they're a little tight. Now, Contreras, I see it in a different way as far as he is doing that in a sense for street cred. He wants the pitchers to know that he has their back, that he's going to stick up for them. And I imagine that throughout that game that Contreras and Jordan, the umpire, were having words. Because to go from 0 to 100, and he kind of, when he was arguing, you could tell that he was arguing about the current thing and like kind of talking about stuff in the past. So I imagine that throughout the game, it was back and forth. And then finally, that was kind of the tipping point. The thing I am worried about, the thing that kind of worries me is he threw his mask, and when he threw his mask, it bounced back up and hit Jordan, the umpire, obviously with zero intent. But I was there in Toronto when Brett Laurie threw his helmet. And when he threw his helmet and it jumped back up and hit the umpire, it was a suspension. And not only was it a suspension, worse than the suspension, all the umpires ganged up against him. You know very well, you've had a show with the umpires, you know very well these guys protect themselves. And that's what worries me more than anything, is not suspensions, it's not John Lackey, it's not the way they act, is when he's back behind the dish, umpires, are they going to mess with him? And are umpires going to squeeze him back there? When he's back there, are they going to give him a worse zone because he's back there catching and they don't want to deal with him when he's hitting? Are they going to start opening up the zone again or for him? That happened to Brett Laurie. So I'm wondering if it happens to Wilson Contreras.
Well, I think that's really interesting. And you bring it up for Contreras. That really isn't even a side of it that I thought of, that the umpires would try getting back at him. What I was thinking, though, you throw the mask down, it hits the umpire. This is just bad long-term for the Cubs because he's getting suspended. I don't think there's any doubt about it. You reference Laurie. I think we see Contreras really going off the hook in this game. I don't think there's any defending Wilson Contreras, though, in this situation. I know he's young. I know he's got a lot to learn, and I know he's fiery, and he's trying to protect his teammate. But in that situation, when you're that important to this team, you spent time in the DL recently, they struggled without you, you can't be getting tossed in that situation. Absolutely inexplicable. Wilson Contreras cannot be doing that in that situation. And for John Lackey, what is he doing? He's been through this a million times before. He has to know how to deal with umpires. It was a horrible call on Carlos Martinez. It was strike three. Everybody in the world knows it. But for Lackey to go out there and chew out the umpire like he did, these are too important. These games are too important, JP. They were only up by a run at the time. If that had not worked out the way it had, then Milwaukee's three back and St. Louis is two back.
Yeah.
At the end of this game, you cannot do it. If you're both these players, they got to know better. Yeah, and I'm sure that they do after the fact.
But I'm saying, though, what that tells me is these guys are puckering up a little bit more than you would think. And they obviously haven't made a gap. They haven't, you know, turned it on. We expected them to turn it on at some point. They haven't been able to do that. So I think that they're feeling the heat. Think about it in real life. When you're a little bit anxious or where you're a little bit worrisome, things get to you a little quicker, right or wrong?
Correct.
And I think you look at it on the baseball field, these guys, the way they acted on the fifth inning and giving up one run, you would have thought that was the end of their season. And that just tells me that these guys are playing with a little bit of worry and holy smokes, we're not in trouble, but we can be in trouble real quick. And that's what that kind of showed me with the reaction of Lackey right there. And again, like you said, in the fifth inning, you're right. Hands down, Lackey, first off, his experience, he should be much better to know that. I mean, how many umpires miss calls? You know, they obviously miss calls. You have to be able to do it a different way. And then Wilson Contreras, he has to understand he's a huge part of that offense. I mean, he's been the most consistent, if not one of the better hitters in the second half for them. He has to understand in a game like that, not only what he does behind the dish, what he does at the plate, he needs to stay in because they need that bat. Just like any big player, Harper early in his career, all these different guys that are guys that you need in the lineup, when it comes to crunch time, they'll learn, and this will be a teaching point for him, is, hey, man, I know you're upset. We need you in that game. We can't be giving up opportunities for you to get at-bats.
The Brewers taking on the Marlins. The Brewers are the road team in their home park. By the way, what'd you think about that? You know, the Astros didn't want to do it. The Marlins said, hey, let's go up there. I kind of feel like it's the same thing with Tampa Bay. It's like, let's go play somewhere else so people will come to our games and we can make some money. This is even a little bit more understandable because, you know what? No. It's not even more understandable. It's the same thing. I think, in Miami, probably would have been a nice time. Hey, let's open up our doors. You could play these games and have some free air conditioning. Don't people need a place to go without power still and go let some people into the ballpark? I think this was all about money too, by the way.
I mean, I could possibly agree with that. I mean, especially, you've been around the game. I've been around the game.
JP, you've lived there. I mean, you are Miami. You know the people down there. How much would they have loved to get 50,000 people in a place that's air-conditioned?
Yeah.
Dollar tickets or something like that.
Yeah, they would, but the problem is the street. So, like, in the Brickell area, if you remember, you guys, we were in the beach more for the All-Star game, but The Brickell area, which is the area that's very close to the stadium, it was underwater big time. Like not good. Like really, really bad. And it was a complete mess. So for people to travel, and again, this is all close to where the stadium is, that's the reason why I think that was, you know, that would have been the decision. But I never, ever, unfortunately, give people the benefit of the doubt in the sense of business comes first. I mean, you know, you and I both know, you've seen it as in the reporting game. I've seen it in playing. Business trumps everything else in the game of baseball. And it's unfortunate, especially these low market teams. Most decisions, if not all of decisions, are made just solely on business.
Well, I just got a text from a buddy that's listening to us live, and he said that the first responders and Monroe County residents. Now, where's Monroe County?
Monroe County is, I want to say, further south.
Is that like the Keys, maybe?
The Keys, yes, the Keys.
Okay, so basically, the first responders and guys and ladies from the Keys get to go to the games for free for the rest of the year. So, first of all, that's awesome. So, he said the first responders and Monroe County residents can go to the games for free. That being said, people that live in Miami do not get in for free. The first responders don't get there either. But that was a nice gesture by the Marlins. I will say that. But there's no doubt in my mind that the reason why this thing was moved, the roof is damaged. But come on. You could have hooked up tens of thousands of people. And I understand moving it. Maybe there are safety concerns. You could have hooked up tens of thousands of people in Miami, air conditioning, let them in for a dollar. Let them in for a few hours. Maybe you leave. You open the gates early. You leave the gates open a little bit later on. I just think they could have done something for the community down there, and that's my take on it. I don't blame them for moving it again financially. I like the fact that they're going to give first responders and people from a different county free admission, but that's how I look at it. And I had no problem with the Rays doing it. And you know, the Astros and the Rangers had their tiff. I think a lot of that had to do with the rivalry, but hey, you got to do what you got to do as an owner to try and make some money. And I think that those two franchises saw an opportunity to make a little bit, because how packed is that series going to be up there in Milwaukee? The Brewers fans are going nuts. They're going gaga over this team. I mean, maybe they draw a little less when the Packers are playing. Packers, I think, are a Sunday night game. They're probably going to pack that place all weekend long.
Yeah, well, and let me tell you something else, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but not a lot of people from Monroe County are traveling up to Miami to watch a baseball game. And unfortunately, I would say if there's any, there will be very, very few to make that trip. It's not an easy trip. It's not a short trip. So I think that's kind of the Marlins going – I mean, again, I hate to say this, but I think that's the Marlins going, oh, yeah, we're going to take care of these guys, but them knowing very, quite frank, that they're not going to be coming to the game. I mean, it's the truth. I hate to say it, but it's the truth.
Listen, I'm with you. I understand what you're saying, because they didn't give it to the people in Miami. Now, it's an easy comeback for the Marlins. Hey, we're doing something for people that were devastated down. And I just looked it up on a map. You were obviously, you're from there. It's part of the southern tip of the peninsula and then into the Keys. But, you know, you're giving free tickets to them. I love the first responders. That's absolutely taking care of those people. You take care of the first responders. Very important. But why wouldn't you just extend the effort to the rest of Miami? Because a lot of people lost power there too.
Because they know that they'd be coming to the games and they'd lose money. I hate to say that, but dude, it's just the freaking truth. It's sickening, but that's the way it works.
You're listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro. And we'll be right back with more after this.
Stay up to date on the latest news as it happens on TuneIn.
From American politics to global events, get live 24/7 coverage with some of the top news media outlets in the world,
including CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio.
And when breaking news hits, TuneIn keeps you updated with up-to-the-minute reports and analysis on the biggest stories of the day.
Thank you for joining us with this breaking news report. Really appreciate it.
Day or night, get live news coverage from around the world on TuneIn.
And now, time for more of the MLB at the Plate podcast, presented by National Car Rental. Go National, go like a pro. Now, here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and J.P. Arencibia.
Next up is the Throw Like a Pro segment, where J.P. and I key in on a moment, individual, or a team's entire bullpen to open up for discussion. Tonight, we focus on the National League and the revamped Washington Nationals bullpen.
Throw Like a Pro on MLB at the Plate, presented by National Car Rental. Go National, go like a pro.
Let's do this. Let's throw it like a pro, presented by National Car Rental. I think to start with the Nationals bullpen, since the overhaul at the trade deadline, you start with their closer, Sean Doolittle. You know, your thoughts on Doolittle, I don't think he was handed this job. I think he earned the job after he got the first shot at getting it. Since he's been with the Nats, he's got a whip of just of exactly one. That's walks and hits and innings pitched. I mean, he's not allowing anybody on base. Got a 2.16 ERA. He's picked up 18 saves since August. This guy has really been remarkable at the back end.
Yeah, he was one of the more dominant closers really in baseball for a while. And when he was with the A's and pitching on a team that was competitive and then, you know, kind of on its way out here late. So to get over there to Washington, I'm sure gave him a new sense of energy and a better feeling. And he has been phenomenal. I think it was the biggest moves as far as maybe not paying the biggest dividends, but what I mean as the biggest moves is the Nationals needed to shore up their bullpen. There was a huge void in a bullpen for a team that was a championship caliber team with nothing on the back end of that bullpen to stop games. So right away you bring in three guys who have closers experience, but one of them who's been good throughout his entire career is he has the mentality to do it and to do it day in and day out, and he's proved it. So I think it was undoubtedly for me the biggest need for a team that was answered, especially the ninth inning, because we've talked about it. Think about the last championship teams that have won playoffs. You name one of them that doesn't have a dominant closer.
Yep, and listen, they went out and they got three guys. Kintzler was leading the Twins in saves. They got Madsen, who had closing experience in the playoffs before when he was with Philadelphia. And then they go out and they get Doolittle, who's just having a remarkable season coming over from the A's and now at the back end. And he was given the first shot at the closer's job, and he didn't look back. And I really can't stress how important that was, given that this team had no confidence in their bullpen. You know, if Doolittle and Madsen come over and both of them struggle, where's this team right now? Forget about it. This had to work out for Rizzo, and they both worked out to this point. Look at Ryan Madsen. I mean, Madsen has just been downright nasty when it comes down to it. He's got a 1.29 ERA in his 14 innings so far with the ball club. He's got a whip of 0.714. He was on the DL for a little bit, but Madsen has been ridiculously good.
Yeah, he's another guy. When he's healthy, one of the more dominant pitchers. His stats prove it throughout his career. And again, he, you know, goes to Oakland and is able to stay healthy and have a great year and has continued it on. One of the better, you know, off speeds in the game. He can get the fastball into the mid-90s, tall pitcher. And like you said, he has been in it in the experience of playoff caliber baseball. He's been in it on championship caliber teams. The experience is invaluable also to go along with talent. And like you said, Kintzler was, you know, an all-star as a closer for the Minnesota Twins. So this guy comes with a huge pedigree and has had a phenomenal year and has a great arm. And again, what I like is they have a guy who's been able to close games, and now you move him to the seventh, you move him to the eighth, and you make that bullpen just so much better. He doesn't have the playoff experience, which I think is going to be great to have Doolittle and Madsen around them, because they'll be able to really kind of help him in those situations, make sure he's prepared, mentally talk to him, do things that will be able to shape him so that when it comes playoff time, they don't have any hiccups out of a Kintzler.
All right, and then you've got Brandon Kintzler, who comes over from the Minnesota Twins, was the closer there. And I mean, what would you rather do? Be on a team that at the time was a 500 team, they were selling parts. Would you rather be a closer on that team, or would you rather go and pitch the seventh or the eighth inning on a World Series contender? And now we look at it, the Twins are in a position to get a wild card, but the Nationals are on a different level right now. And for Kinsler to go from a closer to a seventh inning man, he's got a 2.79 ERA and a 1.13 whip. He's another guy. He has shut it down in the seventh inning, another big piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, and he's going to want to be back. At the end of the day, if you're a seventh or eighth inning guy, you're not getting any kind of close to the amount of money you're getting as a closer. So if he would have continued to put up the numbers as a closer that he was putting up, you know, come arbitration, you're talking about some monster bank breaking numbers. But like you said, as a competitor, as a winner, you want to be in big games, you want to be in games that matter. And, you know, now you're on a team that every day you wake up and you go to the yard, you know that you're in first place. You know that you have a chance to compete in the playoffs and win a World Series possibly. So I imagine that it has to be an opportunity that he would have been very – if you would have told him when he was with the Twins, hey, man, do you want to play on a first place team with a chance to win the World Series? Or – But you're not going to be closing, or do you want to just continue closing on a team that you don't know what you have? And I guarantee you he was going to want to pitch on the World Series team, because everybody already saw him be the closer and be an all-star closer. Teams know about that. The Nationals know about that. Everybody knows about that. So, at some point in his career, he'll be pitching in that ninth inning. For now, enjoy getting holds and trying to win a championship.
Well, last year the Nationals took seven pitchers in their bullpen. This year they're going to go Doolittle, Madsen, Kinsler from the backside, and they'll probably have Matt Albers and Oliver Perez as one of the lefty specialists, and Edwin Jackson in all likelihood will be the long man. So that's going to leave one spot open, whether it be Blanton or Solis or Eddie Romero or Sean Kelly of the like. But the Nationals bullpen definitely better now, so much better now than it was in July.
You're listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro. And we'll be right back with more after this. There's hits, and then there's all-time rock classics from the 60s and 70s. With classic rock hits on TuneIn, relive the very best sounds that defined an entire generation. If I ever get out of, listen to the greatest rock songs in history with classic rock hits on TuneIn. And now, time for more of the MLB at the Plate podcast, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro. Now, here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and J.P. Arencibia.
There were 15 games on Friday, and to bring you up to speed on all the action, we got the best day ever, Home Run Tracker, and statistically speaking.
Best day ever, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro.
What's your pitcher, J.P.? Who's your pitcher?
It wasn't an impressive line, but it's an impressive line because it halted a 22-game win streak. Jason Vargas with the win tonight, his 16th win. Five innings pitched, five hits, three runs, three earned. Again, not special, but it's special because of what he was able to stop.
At no point in time did we talk about the Oakland-Philadelphia game, for good reason, but Daniel Mengden threw a complete game, two-hit shutout. No walks, 7 Ks, A's 4, Phillies nothing. Daniel Mengden, it's true, best day ever. At the plate, who do you got?
I went with my buddy, Zach Cozart, Ole Miss Rebel, 2 for 5, 2 home runs. Bring his average up to over 300, and he is having a phenomenal year with his 22nd home run.
I'm going to go with Neil Walker. Played a little first base tonight, normally second base with the Brewers. He highlighted an 8-run eighth inning for the Brewers tonight in their win over the Marlins with a grand slam. 2 for 4, 4 RBIs, big grand slam there for Neil Walker of the Milwaukee Brewers. Best day ever. Now, you can hear my voice. It is not good right now, so why don't you take the home run tracker?
MLB at the Plate Home Run Tracker.
I will do that, Mr. Holden.
Thank you.
Today, we have Tommy Pham going 426 feet, 110 miles an hour and 22 degrees. I do not know what launch angle means, but it's 22 degrees. Chris Bryant, 400 feet, 103 miles per hour off the bat at an unknown 29 degrees.
You don't need to do degrees, dude. Make your life as simple as possible.
Okay, thank you. Justin Turner, 425, 104 miles an hour off the bat. Matt Olson, we did not get his info, but I can attest. I saw the replay. It went over the wall for a home run. Yasiel Puig, 382 feet, 100 miles an hour. Joey Votto, 411 with 104 miles an hour off the bat. Wellington Castillo, Beef Wellington, 346, short homer, 102 miles an hour. Corey Seager, 429 feet, 104 miles an hour. Matt Joyce, 343, 95 miles an hour, weak sauce. Alcides Escobar, 367, 97 miles an hour off the bat. Adani Hecheverria, 417, 105 miles an hour off the bat. Yoan Moncada, 398, 108 miles an hour off the bat, smashed. Jose Ramirez, 425, 102 off the bat. Mitch Moreland, 379 feet, 103 off the bat. Zach Cozart, 402 feet, 103. Brandon Moss, B-Moss, 404 and at 104 miles an hour. Wilson Ramos, I think this is the longest home run of the night. No, it's not. 437 feet, 108 miles an hour. Steven Vogt, 386, 99 miles an hour. Didi Gregorius, 418, 102. Zach Cozart, 358 at 103. Scott Schebler, 367, 101. Kevin Pillar, also known as Pilar, 379 feet, 94 miles an hour, weak sauce. That would be the slowest mile per hour off the bat of the night. Tyler Collins, 375 at 101. Greg Bird, 378, 99 off the bat. Brian Dozier, 401, 107. Josh Donaldson, 372 at 101. Wilson Ramos, 353. At 99 miles an hour. Longest home run of the day by Will Myers, 457, 107 miles an hour. Eric Thames, 368, 104, which put them on top by one. Then to be Tommy topped by Neil Walker, who went with a grand slam at 398 feet, 100 miles an hour. Domingo Santana, 406, 105, and Nolan Arenado rounding it up at 428 and 104 miles an hour. And next, the things that I hate the most, stats.
Statistically speaking,
the Cubs have scored 47 runs in their last four games. Only the Rockies, 49, July 16th through the 19th, and Astros, 48, May 28th through the 31st, have more this season.
You know what? That tells me that the Cubs' offense is rolling and their pitching still stinks.
Hey, hey, this is not your time to shine.
Usually I let you shine.
Pipe down. Yeah. Save your voice. It's my time.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so back to stats. The last time the Cubs scored at least eight runs in four straight games at Wrigley Field was 1929. At the All-Star break, the Cubs were 43-45 with a run differential of zero. Post All-Star break, the team is 38-21 with a run differential of 102, plus 102, which, who cares? They're winning games. Indians, Jose Ramirez is batting 340 with a 390 on-base percentage and a 657 slugging with 37 doubles, 4 triples, 19 home runs, and 9 stolen bases over his last 81 games played. That's pretty good. Aaron Judge has 11 more home runs this season versus the Orioles. Has 11 home runs this season versus the Orioles. Only two Yankees have had more versus an opponent in a single season. That's because the Orioles pitching staff is a brutal. Chris Sale finishes the night with 9 Ks against the Rays. His 287 Ks this season are now third most in a single season in Red Sox history. The White Sox, Avisail Garcia, hitting .415 in 34 games since returning from the DL. And today, Jed Lowry became only the only player ever with multiple seasons. Wow, that's pretty cool. With at least 45 doubles for the Athletics. That's a long history. And Jed Lowry, congratulations, because he is one of the guys who is the least assuming baseball player you will ever see in street clothes, but he is a very dang good baseball player on the field.
All right, very good stuff. Good job, JP Aaron Sebia. That's it for the MLB at the Plate podcast. Make sure to join us on MLB on TuneIn at 7 Eastern each weeknight for MLB at the Plate. During the daily five-hour show, you'll not only hear all of what you heard on the podcast, you also have the chance to listen live to the games and get the action as it happens. For Ryan and Dustin in the LA studio and JP Aaron CB alongside me, I'm Holden Kushner, and we'll catch you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listenings, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. Tune in, your everything audio app.